Good to be with you. Last time I spoke here, about a couple of months ago, I took the theme of shame. Some of you may remember. And we looked at the fact that in many ways, Jesus behaved shamefully in the eyes of the church authorities, the Jewish authorities, many of the senior people there, the Romans, etc., etc. He was always mixing with the wrong people. He was touching lepers. He was healing people on the Sabbath day, which he shouldn't have done. He was talking to women, and particularly Samaritan women, who no one talks to. And generally speaking, he was being kind and generous, but he never talked to people harshly individually. He spoke except to shout to people, but I'm going to come on to that. And he was always wanting to give the individual person the chance to be restored and renewed and to find that new close relationship with him. We looked at the Samaritan woman who'd had five husbands. We'd looked at the woman who was taken in adultery. We'd looked at the woman who had been leading a sinful life, who poured ointment on him and saw that he never condemned, and he always spoke in gentle terms, not condoning the way they lived at all, but saying you have a chance to change and move into a new life. But we read in the Gospels, we also see that Jesus became extremely angry with certain people. He calls the scribes and Pharisees a den of a den of vipers and a whitewashed sepulchre. He took physical action in the temple. He actually went in and turned all these tables over, and he said to them, this is supposed to be a house of prayer, and you've turned it into a den of robbers. He called Herod by names. I can't remember what he called him, but anyhow, he called, what was it?
Old fox.
A fox, right. Yes. So I think we have trouble sometimes in an identifying where and how evil is clearly at work in our world. Sin we tend to talk about in terms of individual actions. So I can act sinfully, I can commit adultery, I can thieve, I can be very rude to people, I can be cruel, I can be those things. And of course those are sins, and those are not good things to do and need to be changed, and we need to control ourselves and seek forgiveness for those things. But there is this much bigger sin which is encompassing the world. There's more evil in the way society works and treats people generally over the world than just individual sin. And if this is Paul writing in his letter to the Ephesians about principalities and powers. So he says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realm. So Paul is talking about not just individual sins. So when Jesus, for instance, was attacking the scribes and Pharisees, he wasn't taking each Pharisee and saying, you've been unfaithful to your wife, or you didn't give that person what they should have had, or whatever it is. He's talking about something which goes beyond just an individual person. He's talking about the way people act as a whole and organize things which affect other people. And as a result of that, Jesus was actually himself. That's why Jesus was so fierce about the scribes and the Pharisees, because they were the people who, as it were, led the religion of the country. They were regarded with great honor. They were priests, you were bowing to priests, you were listening to them, and yet all the priests and the Levites were doing was putting burdens on people, condemning them all the time, telling them that they were all sinful, telling them we've got to go through these rituals and kill things in order to be forgiven, and doing all this type of stuff. And actually, they were doing nothing to tell them about what a gracious God is about. And that's why Jesus got so angry with them, because he wasn't talking about a God that could actually come and give them a new life and work with them and do that. And this was spread right across the country. And so what happened was that he challenged it, and by challenging it, of course, he faced that power. And that power got rid of him. That power in the end came and made all sorts of accusations against him and actually brought him to the point where he was crucified, the worst death he could suffer. So that is the sort of power that is beyond just individual sin. It's a power exercised by organizations or institutions or whatever it is, which is very destructive in the world that we live in. Jesus had come to tell us and show us in his life that God was continually a loving God, and living out that, he was bound to challenge that way. And the Apostle Paul, who wrote this letter, clearly was caught in that power, that devilish power, because he was the one going around, going to all the places saying all the Christians should be killed. They should all be put in prison, or they should all be worked against, etc. He was part of that system because he'd been brought up in that way. He was a Pharisee. He was part of what they were all about, and he bought into that. And that's the way things happen. People buy into things and start exercising them and working in that sort of way, doing so much damage. And he had been turned round by Jesus. Jesus had appeared to him on the way to Damascus, and Jesus had said to him, "Why are you persecuting me?" And he fell and he lost his sight, and all that happened. And now he's able to recognize that and say, actually, that was part of a power that was being exercised from above. We can lose that reading. Thank you. And what I'm talking about isn't just the religion of the country of the Jews. When Jesus talked about gave his parallels, he wasn't just talking about religious practices going on in the temple and other things. He was also gave a lot of talk in his parables about how paying employees and how they should be paid. He was talking about tenants and landlords. He was talking about stewards and owners, and he was talking about skills and talents. He was talking about a whole range of things to do with life as a whole, not just what had been talked about in religious circles and in religious ways. I think sometimes we think that there are things which are holy and things which are not unholy, but things which are in the old world profane, which means secular, which means they're not really to do with religion at all or faith at all. So on a Sunday we may come to a vineyard and worship God, and that's a holy thing to do. On Monday we go to work, and that's not a holy thing to do. People go to work, and I just got to earn a living and I got to keep my family, so that's not really to do with my religion at all. So that's out of that thing. And that just isn't true. Because Jesus came as the light of the world. He came into this world, which he had created, and he is responsible for everything around us. He is responsible for the air we breathe, for the water we drink, for the... Someone was praying this morning for creation, our appreciation of creation. He is responsible for everything that we take for granted day by day and year by year. And so, of course, he's interested in all that. And because we're made in his image and his likeness, we are actually holy. People are holy. This ground is holy. This land is holy. This whole universe is actually holy because it is God created. Just taking some verses out of Colossians, which again is Paul writing, talking about Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven, things on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things are created by him. And here part of that is all rulers and authorities. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and firstborn from the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile himself in all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. And so, all things come under Jesus's, and all things are actually potentially holy and are holy. So when you look at things as they are, each organization that is in the world has two aspects to it. It's got just a practical, physical aspect. So a shop or whatever it is, or would have a building, it would have some furniture, it would have some staff living in it or working in it. But it also has another side to it, which is its personality, the personality of that institution or organization. So whether the organization is the House of Commons, whether it's Amazon Business, whether it's the National Health Service, they all have a spirituality. They wouldn't necessarily call it that, and a lot of them wouldn't say that that was a true thing, but it's true because everything, rulers and authorities, everything is made and created by God and therefore has a spirituality. And that is the way in which they treat their employees, how they treat their customers, how they treat their suppliers, how they treat all the things that they take out of this earth in order to make use of them. It's all those things. Are they ways in which God would want them to be run, and how should they be run? And all those things turns into that spirituality. So bringing it down to West Auckland, the well is there. And it's got some furniture, and it's got some equipment, and it's got those sorts of things. But it's also got a spirituality. Now, let's recognize more in the well, because it's run by Christians. And they are wanting to do more than just sell a cup of coffee to somebody. They want to actually influence the area and bring people to a better knowledge of Christ and work in people's lives and do that. Now, that's a particularly Christian organization. But all organizations as a whole are there to help people and to work with people. So the MPs are supposed to be governing well in the name of God, that we want good government. Amazon is supposed to be producing good things for people to buy. The National Health Service is there to do benefit for people in healing and all those things. But then the question is, how are they actually doing that? How are they running their organizations? How are they actually working in creating those things and working with people so that they're doing good, unlike those Pharisees and Sadducees. And this happens on a bigger scale with corporations and institutions and bankers who can be working on a much bigger scale. And actually they become too big to be controlled in a proper way. They get beyond criticism. They're looked upon with such veneration, as it were, that they are the ones who become much bigger than they should do often, and that they can cause more damage than they are helping people at all, and real damage. Netflix is quite good at actually producing films which uncover those types of things, because often they're very hidden. The devil is good at disguising. It looks very good on the surface, it's talked about well, but actually it's not. Hannah and I were watching a thing, some of you may have seen, called Painkiller, which has been on the Netflix recently, and which is about a pharmaceutical company producing a thing called Oxycron, which is a painkiller. Now, a painkiller is a good thing. If you've got pain, you need a painkiller often. But actually, this Oxycron painkiller is incredibly addictive. And so what people have done is they've started to use painkiller, and then they can't stop using it, and then they become addicted to it, and actually it's a drug. And many hundreds and even thousands of people have died as a result of addiction to Oxycron. So has that been taken to court? Has it actually been looked at and worked at on a basis to say, this is wrong? There have been many people who've tried to do that. And the difficulty is the people at the head of Oxycron have got interest in people who in the Senate or the powers that be. By one means, and even in the legal system, there's been small efforts at doing it which have never got anywhere. And so Oxycron is still being sold, and the owners have about £11 billion in the bank. So it's those sorts of things which are destroying the world that we live in it, and are the things that Paul described as powers and principalities which can get hold of people and gather them in and cause them to work in that sort of way. I mean, I suppose another example is a Russian state. You know, the Kremlin is now in the position of having told their own people that in order to have a good country, in order to save us from attack from the West, in order to make you much safer here as a country, we need to do this operation in the Ukraine, which involves killing thousands of people, destroying livelihoods, destroying this, that, and the other. And yet the people in Russia are left with the feeling that these things are happening, when actually it's incredibly evil and incredibly destructive. The source of evil has been identified for centuries as the world, the flesh, and the devil. I've been focusing on the world with the devil in the background, but very much involved. And Paul, again, in one of his letters, writes in Romans, "Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will know, be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasant, and perfect will." So we've been warned about that, and Paul says we need each of us to have that transforming work of God in our lives in order for us to be able to see some of these things. And in order to be able to follow Jesus, we really want to be angry at the things that Jesus was angry about, as well as doing the good that Jesus was wanting to do good. How can we do that? I mean, it's a very big task. What can we do about it? We're still just living in a village here in northeast of England. Well, I think we can look at how and what we buy and from whom we buy it. And if we're in a job, we can look at the spirituality of that organization and think about that, who we work for. Not whether they have got a lot of Christians in it necessarily, but actually what the standards and behavior of that particular organization. Because much of the problem with evil, as I said, is it, and of the world, is that these things are disguised, that people think that they're okay, but actually they're not. I suppose just in conclusion, I'm say this is a particular thing, perhaps in my own life, because fairly soon after I became a Christian, 50 years or so ago, about a year later, I was reading the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, and what it was saying there about blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those there. And I was at that stage realizing those aren't my aims at all in my life. I was a banker in the city of London, earning a lot of money. I stood for Parliament. I wanted to become a politician and do all that. And as I read those words just after I became a Christian, I just knew that's not for me. I shouldn't be. That's not my ambitions. And so within a year, I'd left the city and I'd left politics and started to train for the ministry. And God was directing me at that particular time to work in a different way. And so I've still used my skills. Hannah and I have got married. I wouldn't never have met Hannah if I hadn't thought about that and gone into a completely different place. We'd never have met. And so God then leads you into the different things and the different patterns of your life after that. Hannah is not very well at the moment, I'm afraid, to not be able to be here, but have we done brilliantly? Who knows? Basically, you can never tell. We work particularly to create hostels and businesses to help unemployed people and to help people who are homeless and so on in London, and some of that stuff is still going on. So we've made many mistakes over the years. We've got things wrong. So we're not, there isn't a perfect plan. God says, right, this is the model, this is the blueprint. Do this, do this, do this. You just have to work with God day by day and actually just accept, here I am, I'm for you in what I'm doing. And what I'm doing isn't for my glory, it's for yours. And so just help me in the struggles that I'm having. So I just leave you with that as a way in which perhaps we can look at our lives and still do at the age that I am, because that's the only way we can live. Amen.